is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I am Dave Ross here, DraftKings Sportsbook rather, and in for Femi today. I am Dave Ross. Michael, great to be with you today. Going to have a great show today. Going to have Bucky Brooks join us to talk all things NFL. In just a little bit, Jonathan Von Tobel is going to join us to talk NBA. Plenty of draft news still to cipher through now that we get a little bit removed from it. But I do want to start with the NBA and get your thoughts on what you saw. And I know we got a lot to get to. The big shocker last night in Denver with Anthony Edwards, 43 points. Minnesota getting a big win. We got a game 7 today between Cleveland and Orlando. But you're there. You're close to Philly. We haven't talked to you since the 76ers defeat. And I don't mean to start it off on a bummer note, but you're so close to the organization, to the city and everything.
There's no bummer.
So I just got to know what's going on in
Philly.
There's
no bummer. There's reality. There's just reality. Well, when I worked for the Cleveland Browns, Art Modell used to always say, kid, we sell hope. Mm. And, you know, a guy that grew up in Brooklyn, New York, you know, we'll get him next year, was the Dodgers line or the Giants when they played there. You know, next year we'll get him. And so he believed in hope. And so that's all us 76er fans have is hope, is because this process has gone on for 10 years. Embiid's been there 10 years. It's gone on longer. And it hasn't advanced past the second round. So, you know, now there's a lot of, it's like the Warren Commission. A lot of people have different variations of why it didn't. But at the end of the day, you know, this team is going nowhere and no one's going to have the guts to tear it down. I think the one thing, David, that we have learned through this playoff series and through the lack of the way the older players have to take care of their bodies in the NBA, the 82-game schedule, is there's no really old team left. I mean, the Clippers are gone. Harden had nothing left in his legs. Of course, the Sixers may trade for Paul George. He'll have nothing left in his legs next May, you know. And so when you look at the Lakers, LeBron, as great as he is, it's hard for him. These older teams really struggle. We got Cleveland and Orlando today, two young teams. The Knicks, a young team, right? Milwaukee went with Lillard, older team. Giannis is hurt. I mean, to me, there's a pattern here. Phoenix, older team. Minnesota, young team. To me, there's a pattern. And that pattern indicates that if you want to really contend, you can't go this older team even as much rest as you have. I mean, how long have we been waiting for Kawhi Leonard to be healthy or Joel Embiid to be healthy? Everybody says, well, we'll get him next year because Embiid will be healthy. Really? He's never been healthy for a playoff series ever. 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 So to me, that's what the lesson is. And as an executive in any sport, whether it's the NBA or the NFL, age does matter. The older you become, the harder it is to stay healthy, and it's the harder to play really well. Brett Veach said the other day when they gave Travis Kelce the big contract, he doesn't look like he's 36. Well, that's because we're in May. Trust me, in November, he'll look like he's 36.
That's the part about it, being an executive, turning over a roster and making it younger, but still keeping whatever core you think is there to be able to compete. How difficult is that? And you've done it. You know what that's like. How to infuse that younger blood, keep some of the old, but not all of the old, because I think you just diagrammed it perfectly in the NBA this year. It does feel to be like a stark difference between when you saw Minnesota sweep out Kevin Durant, and Booker's not even old, but you know, you look at it and you go, wow, it just feels like young legs versus old legs here. Is it really that simple? And how do you do that delicate balance of turning over a roster while staying competitive?
Well, I think the number one thing, and the 76ers won't adhere to this, is they can't fall into the then is then, now is now rule, right? Daryl Morey, the 76ers president, GM, I mean, all he cares about is numbers. Paul George's numbers, if he tries to sign him, are not relevant from what he's done in the past to what he does. You have to be able to see a veteran player and predict the future. But to think you're going to get 35 minutes or 40 minutes in a playoff series with guys that legs are diminishing is really not reality. So you have to build your team around that. And you've got to do a really good job of developing young players like Oklahoma City has done. And we'll see them against the Dallas Mavericks, or change the roster as Dallas has done with a good job, whether it's been the drafting of Lively or the addition of PJ Washington. I think those things have come in and made, you know, Doncic is not an older player. Kyrie Irving is still playing at a high level of his game. He's not considered old. So I think that's what you have to do. You have to have the right balance, and it's critical because it is a young man's game, especially in the NBA. And the notion that, well, you have to have a top pick to get great players. Well, the Sixers had top picks. Jameel Okafor, that didn't work out. Ben Simmons, that didn't work out. You know, Embiid's a great talent, never got past the second round. The only MVP who's never been to a final. So, like, tell me, Markelle Fultz was the first pick overall in a draft. You know, and they're not there. So I think that's really unreal. Their best player is Tyrese Maxey, was picked 20th. See, that violates the process theory right there.
I think the stunner to come out so far of the NBA playoffs, not only did Minnesota get that sweep against Phoenix, and you saw Anthony Edwards dunk over KD in a two-point game, you know, fourth quarter to close out. It's like a moment. And then they go to Denver yesterday, and Ant puts up 43. They beat the Joker and the Nuggets 106-99 to take a one game to none lead there. Remember that the price of the Nuggets coming into that series is only about, they were about a 2-1 betting favorite. And I went, boy, it feels light. Doesn't feel light anymore when you look at the way Minnesota did it. And I know that the LeBron stands are already mad at everybody going, boy, Anthony Edwards reminds you of somebody. He for people of a certain age, Michael, that we, you know, we lived it, we watched it, we saw it. He does have some of those similarities. You never put him in the MJ conversation. Of course, he's got a whole career to go, fourth year guy, but it does feel different. Does it not? When you see something like Anthony Edwards and what's happening with Minnesota, I don't know if they can win the series against Denver, but they're off to a flying start.
They are. And, you know, JVT talked about it, and he thought the number was too long for Minnesota in this when we had him. And we'll look forward to having him at 10:30 today because, you know, with Reed and some of the additions they made. I mean, yeah, think about this, David. They won that game last night, and McDaniels, one of their best players, was 0-for-7 from the floor. Didn't score, but he was plus 14 in the game. Pretty good, right? And so you got to credit Tim Connelly, because when he made the Gobert trade, and everybody said, how in the hell is Gobert and Towns ever going to play together, right?
Right.
And yet he knew Towns wasn't really a center. Towns, you know, he won the three-point shooting contest. I mean, this guy can range and he can run the floor. I mean, he is what Embiid wants to be. Embiid wants to be a three-point shooter and play out in the perimeter and a small forward. Towns does it, right? Towns only had 4 rebounds in the game. Think about it. He's a 7-foot guy. You know, he's the new school 7-footer. And I think, to me, credit Conley here when he came over from Denver. And this series means a lot to him because, obviously, if this is the change of ownership in Minnesota, he has an out in his contract to leave. If Glenn Taylor comes back in and runs the team, he's gone. And that'll really affect Minnesota because they've done a nice – I mean, Naz Reid's a second-round pick?
Yeah.
Now, Edwards was always the best player in the country. Went to Georgia. You know, Tom Crean recruited him to go to Georgia, and then he left after a year. And, unfortunately, he never – you know, he was a young player. He never showed this skill at Georgia on a consistent basis. You saw it, but he has so improved his jump shooting.
Again, this is not – everybody don't freak out. But when you saw MJ win a national championship at UNC, a lot of us that lived through that and saw it, and then you saw the development once he got to the next level, you're starting to see that in a fourth-year guy. It didn't happen for MJ overnight, right? We saw the 63 in the Garden as a rookie, and that put everybody's antenna up. And then you saw the years and struggle to try to get through the bad boy Pistons. And then it all came through. I'm not saying that's going to be the arc of an Anthony Edwards in Minnesota, but it does really look good, and I can't wait to talk to JVT about these series prices now because Minnesota's now favored to win this series at minus $1.20 now that they have home court. And when you hear Anthony Edwards talk, and I know when you talk to these kids as an executive, and now he's a fourth-year player, so he's not a kid, but it doesn't sound like they're you know, all shucks and surprised to be here. They're like, we know who we are. Like, we know we're supposed to be here.
Right. I mean,
that's confidence.
They were the number one team in the West this year, David. Yep. I mean, they were the best team in the West. I mean, so they have confidence. And look, I think the bench for Denver's going to have to really kind of get themselves going, because the bench yesterday produced 15 points. They really couldn't get anything. And as the game went on, it became harder. And, you know, Murray got better in the second half. But to me, look, Minnesota, Denver's not going to go away. They're going to be punches and counterpunches here in this series, especially when you consider Jokic was 11 for 25 from the field. You know, that's never going to happen twice in a game. He's minus 12. But I think it's going to be a fun series to watch. Yep. Just like I think Dallas and Orlando is going to, I mean, Dallas and Oklahoma City is going to be fun to watch, because these are four relatively young teams. And if you're being honest with yourself and you're at the Lakers, and I'm sure Will Hill will make many of these decisions as we move forward, you know, you're going to have to call this forward. You know, you're going to have to look at, say, how do we get out of the West?
Right.
We're not better than these four teams.
Well,
that's what makes the LeBron decision, as we wait for it, so interesting, because he's not, no matter what happens to the Lakers, no matter who they hire, they're not better than these four teams.
No, Darvin Ham is the problem. Apparently, we'll find out if changing the coach in LA is going to be the difference maker next year, but I don't see it. Very quickly, obviously, going to talk a lot of NFL throughout the show. Did you have Mystic Dan on your Kentucky Derby card yesterday?
No, I didn't. I think I had the horse who finished last in the race. You know,
fierceness.
But,
yeah,
I mean, it's so fun, isn't it?
It is amazing.
I mean, isn't it so much fun to watch and to see and to read about these horses and where they come from and how they develop and the trainers? And I mean, it's just a special day, 2 minutes of fun. And that, you know, I couldn't tell who won when I looked at the race. Did you?
No, I no idea. The photo finish was spectacular. You and I were talking about it before the show a little bit. You know, I'm not a big horse guy, but I understand how every year that 2 minutes, it is the most spectacular 2 minutes in sports. It's absolutely riveting. And props to Mystic Dan. What a great race. Held on the inside to win by a nose. Hadn't had a photo finish in quite some time. All right, when we come back, let's talk all things NFL, starting off with OBJ. Will he be a difference maker in Miami? That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. Today, Mike has got a great write-up on everything coming out of the 2024 NFL Draft, with his notes combining free agency with what he saw some teams do in the draft. We'll get to that a little bit later on in this program as well. So get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe today. Back alongside the aforementioned Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. Going to have JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, join us at the bottom half of this hour. I do want to get to some of those notes that we're seeing around the NFL. One of those most notably is OBJ. He's back. Got another team.
Oh, man. He's back.
He's going down in Miami.
It's amazing. I've never seen a guy. I mean, it's incredible how he can create. Well, I mean, it's you know, what happens is he's a story driver,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not from his story on the field. It's from his story for whatever the character of OBJ. I mean, think about this. The two LSU receivers, Jarvis Landry's going to Jacksonville as a tryout. And here's OBJ trying to squeeze every last dollar out of Miami to get $3 million. I mean, Baltimore, you know, not only did Baltimore lose a tough playoff game, that was an $18 million mistake they made last year when they gave him that contract. Why? I have no idea. We said it at the time. But look, this goes back to the conversation we had in the A block, David. Is then is then, now is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to pay for past performance. People pay for past performance, and there's an element here. Now, I'm sure if you're Mike McDaniels, you're saying, look, Hill's going to draw the coverage, right? Waddle's going to get his share of the coverage. We just signed, you know, we signed a Smith, the tight end, which I don't understand that he's a vertical route runner, not an option runner, which is what they would need. And now Beckham should be one-on-one, but I don't think it really matters. I mean, Beckham had no coverage last year. And so it never manifested itself to where he determined the game based on his alignment. And I think Baltimore probably would have been better off taking that $18 million and putting it somewhere else and playing a younger player. See, this is where you get into, right? The coaches want the name. They want an older player. They want somebody in there. The scouts want the younger player who's got vitality and legs, right? And somehow you've got to find a way to meet in the middle. But for Miami, I think it's a waste of $3 million. I think they're just going to – he's not going to impact their offense one bit. They need more physicality. They don't need another receiver.
31 years old at this stage for OBJ. And look, if you can get it, get it. So OBJ, like you mentioned, he's been able to squeeze these things out year in and year out somehow, some way. How do you think that Mike McDaniel – because, you know, if you watch Hard Knocks, you get this kind of genius – moniker that goes with him, at least offensively. And I think some of the schemes he did are innovative. But I ask you, Michael, how do you think he's going to utilize OBJ? Or is it really just he's just a guy now and he's got to be that guy, whatever that might be in our offense, even if it's not featured?
Well, I think what he's basically saying to all of us, he's saying, look, you know, I've got two really great receivers in Tyreek Hill and I've got, Waddle. And so instead of worrying about Braxton Berrios in the slot, instead of worrying about River Crackcraft, you know, and these other receivers that they had on the team, I'm going to sign Odell. I'm going to get, remember, they traded for Chase Claypool last year, right? Remember that? They didn't give up anything for him. Or Cedric Wilson. You know, they've been trying to get this third receiver kind of thing going, and it really hasn't worked out. Because let's face it, you know, you want certain players to play a role within the offense. If you're throwing the ball to Odell and you're not throwing it to Tyreek, something's going on, or to Waddle, right? You can't double everybody. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. And we know this. Miami has yet to beat a good team. We're still waiting on that because they have no power. You know, they have no power in their offensive line. Teron Armstead's always going to be hurt. And, you know, they drafted a kid, Patrick Paul, to be his backup. We'll see if that works out. They signed Aaron Brewer from Tennessee, who was looking to upgrade their offensive line, and they signed Brewer. I mean, this offensive line is going to be the detriment of it, especially when they have to go on the road and the weather starts to become poor and you've got to do it. And then we turn our attention to the defense. Are they going to be good enough defensively? You know, they have a coordinator, you know, that they hired that has been a front seven coach, Anthony Weaver, in Baltimore. It's going to be interesting to see what he can do in the back end. They hired Joe Barry from the Packers to help out in the back end. We'll see. But can they cover? I mean, they've got a lot. Like, they signed Jordan Poyer. There's another example. We need a veteran guy. Well, Poyer's was a good player at one time, but he's not the same player he once was.
Great point. And we're going to see another older player here for the Jets. And that's, of course, Aaron Rodgers, 40 years old. And Robert Saleh says he does not expect that Achilles to be a problem or have any restrictions once we get to OTAs. Who's running that team? Is it Robert Saleh? Is it Aaron Rodgers? I mean, I can't figure it out, but
I don't think you need to have that question answered. We know who runs that team. You know, I mean, just you listen to the head coach. You can't put him in charge. I mean, he's just a cheerleader is really what he is, and it's kind of interesting. And look, all the pressure's on him. I mean, the Ifers have all the pressure on him. If they stay healthy, they have improved their team. If Mike Williams plays, if Aaron Rodgers plays, but we don't know this, right? We don't know what that Achilles is going to look like, and he doesn't really know. He can say, I feel great, but if you don't have that quickness, if you don't have that ability to burst, it can become problematic for him. And, you know, for all the talk about how great they are on defense, Pittsburgh won 10 games without even a good defense, and the Jets couldn't win. The Jets won 7. Mm. Think about that. Now they blame it on the quarterback.
Right.
But, I mean, they haven't changed the offense. Nathaniel Hackett's still the offense coordinator.
Do you want, if you're an executive here with the Jets, do you want to see what he can do at OTAs to get him back out there and test it? Or do want to keep him bubble wrap? Get him out there.
No, I want to see what he looks like. I want to see what he plants and throws, and I want to see where he can go. Here's what you don't want. You don't want the trainers to come to you and the conditioning coach say, this is the best he's ever been, and then he looked bad.
Oh.
That's what happened to us when we had Trent Richardson in Cleveland. You know, the strength coach, he couldn't wait to come running to me. This kid's in great shape. He's in great shape, you know, and he's amazing. He's good. And then you watch him on the field, he couldn't run to the edge. So if this, and I wasn't saying this negatively about Brad Love, the strength coach. I was basically saying, if this is the best he is, and I believe you, then this isn't good enough.
Yeah, that's the right? bigger problem. Absolutely.
And this isn't good enough. At some point, nobody finishes the sentence. I'm in the best shape of my life, but you may not be good enough. So I think that's the decision they've got to make. And look, they're going in with their eyes closed. They're going to convince themselves, and all we're going to read about in all these rookie camps or mini camps or OTA is how great he looks. So just prepare for that. Just take another good 6 weeks of enjoying that with your coffee.
Yeah, 40 years old, never looked better. We're going to get all that rhetoric coming out of
Never
Jet
looked
Skip.
Greater.
Tell me what's
Amazing.
Going
on. You know, it's like he's 30 again.
The 40s is the new 20, apparently. I remember covering those rookie camps in D.C. as an executive. We got six of those teams getting ready to host those rookie camps this weekend. What are you looking for when these rookies show up for the first time?
Conditioning is the only thing you're looking for. Who's in shape and who can't get through a practice? Because most of them won't be able to do it. Most of them have been spending the last 2 months being recruited, being told how great they are. You have to de-recruiting begins in rookie camp, and you got to get them to face reality. I saw today Baltimore had a couple guys that are missing. One guy sprained ankle, another guy hamstrings. Why do you think we have hamstrings? Because we haven't been running. We haven't been working. That's really the thing is you got to bring these players in and inundate them into the system, into the scheme, into the offseason program without injuries occurring because they're not in good shape and they're way too heavy and they're going to have to lose weight. They're going to have to get their bodies ready for the rigors of training camp. And so you can't judge anybody at this point. There's no judgment. There's no evaluation. It's all about conditioning. That's really what it's about, condition. Who's in shape? Who can get through the practice without puking?
Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. I remember in the mid-2000s, the Washington Nationals were having their first ever spring training down in Vieira, Florida. Frank Robinson was the skipper, God rest his soul, the Hall of Famer. And I said, Frank, these guys look great. And he goes, well, what do you see? And I go, well, they look good in the cages. And he goes, cages? I'm 70 years old. I can look good in the cages. So I learned very quickly that you guys as evaluators are looking for different things than what we're looking for in the media. And to your point there with the rookie camp, can you get through it without throwing up? That's what we're looking for some conditioning. So low bars to be set. Very quickly, Michael, we see 18 of the 32 first-round picks from 2021 have had their fifth-year options picked up. What does that say? Does it say 14 couldn't quite make it? 18, we're going to invest one more year in. Is that a significant stat to you?
Well, I think a lot of it is predicated on the cost, right? We see this cap go up and the value of the player. What you're asking yourself is, can we replace this player in the open market for cheaper? And the answer at equal value in terms of performance, not in terms of number. I think that's the fundamental question. And so you can. I mean, T. Higgins is a guy that they just said to themselves, now he wasn't a first rounder, but look, at $20 million, we can't replace it. We would rather have him than spend $20 million somewhere else. So a lot of this is a 1 year. You may let him go and see, but it's probably the prudent play. The quarterbacks are four of the quarterbacks are the reasons why the other 14. So that only really leaves 10 players that didn't get their option picked up. And so as it moves forward, I mean, this is the key, is to make sure that you keep your good players.
With JVT next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you ready to become your own sports betting expert? Well, look no further than a VSiN Pro subscription, your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies for a limited time only. We're going to offer an annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally priced at $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. So sign up today. Also going to give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you're going to gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage in ROI, 19 hours of live programming, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, and our exclusive betting splits, showing you where the money and the bets are moving for every single game. So visit VSiN.com/subscribe today. Claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 with the promo code Lombardi. That's VSIN.com /subscribe. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. This is the Lombardi Line as we continue right now with some NBA talk, Michael, with the host of VSiN Primetime, Jonathan Von Tobel. Follow him on X as I do at me, JVT. Jonathan, great to have you back on talking some NBA this morning on the Progressive Guest Line. Wanted to ask you, Michael and I had this conversation about so far our impressions of the NBA postseason. And does it seem to you like it seems to us, not necessarily changing of the guard, but maybe those younger legs starting to show and some of those other teams with old superstars have to reevaluate what the right path might be to get through in the years to come?
Yeah, I think it might be a mix of those things, guys. But like, these teams are good, right? Like, that's, it might be old legs, but it might just be that these teams did a really good job in scouting and developing some of their talent. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren are freaking awesome. Luka Doncic is incredible. If you look at Minnesota, Anthony Edwards is a great player, and you still have some young pieces there. Karl Anthony Towns, you can still consider young. There's a lot of guys. Jaden McDaniels, some of these teams, and you know, those are mostly Western Conference teams, but the point still stands, right? Like, a lot of these teams have done such a good job in acquiring and developing talent that I think that's more what it's about than almost discrediting them to a certain extent and saying, some of these teams are old. No. Some of these teams are just extremely well constructed and they are very, very good. And this is a changing of the guard. I think we are going to see Shai and Anthony Edwards duking it out with Nikola Jokic for Western Conference titles, along with Luka Doncic. We're going to see these teams rise and we're going to get used to watching these teams play high level basketball. And I think it's a fun thing to watch.
I do too, and I think the word you use to me there that's the right context is roster construction, and I think that's what's lacking in some of these teams that don't play together. And so when Minnesota traded for Rudy Gobert, a lot of people were concerned about having the two big guys, but this has really worked out well. And looking at it last night, even with McDaniels not scoring, they looked in the second half like the much better team.
Yeah, Michael, they did. And, you know, it's again to the point of roster construction, right? It's not just two bigs. You have a big in Karl Anthony Towns that spaces the floor. So you can play him with Rudy Gobert. He can play along the perimeter and allow your team to still have some spacing here while also being able to suffocate teams with your ability to contest, because you got a 6'11" dude that just comes in and helps on some of these shot attempts. And the point about construction, Michael, what you like so much about Minnesota is who just won Sixth Man of the Year? Naz Reid, another center who fits the archetype of Karl Anthony Towns that you can slot in right away. If you need him as a backup center, he can play the five. If you need him at the four, so you can split out Karl Anthony Towns if he's in foul trouble and playing with Rudy Gobert, like, that's good roster construction. You have a guy that can fill the role that you need if your other star is not available to play. And what did we see in the fourth quarter? Naz Reid was incredible, of course. I think he scored 14 points in the fourth quarter, whatever it was absolutely brilliant and helped this team win. Yeah, like, this is what's been great. And to your point about Gobert, Michael, with about 3 minutes left in that game yesterday, the Timberwolves were only up by 3 or 4 points. The Nuggets come down, they run their patented little elbow action where you've got Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot. You've got this dribble handoff going to Jamal Murray. And what happens? Gobert snuffs it out. He steps up enough to force a little lob, floater to Aaron Gordon, but he does it enough so he can actually backpedal, interrupt it, and then, of course, it ends up in a turnover. He was brilliant yesterday in crunch time, too. These guys are just playing really well, and they're just built well. And it looks like, of course, with a 1-0 series lead and home court advantage after they play another one in Denver, that this team's in the driver's seat to potentially make it to a Western Conference Finals.
Well, here we are now with the adjusted series price after that game one. Nuggets basically even money. You got to lay $1.20 now with the T-Wolves. I'm seeing 5.5s here for game two tomorrow night back in Denver. Is this now a buyback spot on Denver at even money, or is this real danger, like you're pointing out, that this T-Wolves team, because you listen to them talk after, and like Michael and I talked, they're not surprised. Media might be surprised. Maybe the rest of the country's surprised, but they're not surprised at all where they are.
No, and this is just a question of where do you rate Denver? Where do you rate Minnesota, Dave? Because these series prices, and our former colleague here at VSiN, Jeff Fogel, does a great newsletter, just wrote about this morning. These are series prices that are baked into these numbers that are going to be the point spreads as you move forward in this series. So if you think that Denver is being undervalued from a point spread perspective as we move forward, then your bet here would be bet Denver. But as somebody who has been very high on Minnesota, I was betting on them when they were punching fire extinguishers and arguing with each other in a play-in last year, and I've got another ticket on them now here, but I think that this is Minnesota's series to lose. And when you look at what they're able to do, yesterday people can look at they're not going to shoot like that again. Guys, you know who the third best shooting team in the NBA was by percentage? It was the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're a big team. They killed Denver on the glass. It did not allow them to generate second chance opportunities. They're going to be able to do that again. I think that this team is constructed to pull this off. So personally, Dave, as somebody who is invested the way that he is, who's got them to win the series, who's got them to win the West, I think it is Minnesota going forward. And I think, by the way, they've been undervalued. Guys, they're 5-0 ATS in this postseason. They're covering on average, covering on average by 14 points per game. If that's not undervalued, I don't know what is.
Well, let's turn our attention to Cleveland, Orlando today in Cleveland. I mean, the one game that was close, Cleveland won by a point. What was it like to get the last game? How do you handicap this one and where are you putting your money, JVT?
Yeah, I think it's under, Michael. If you can get like 195 and a half or better, you're playing this thing under. Two of the games would have gone under this total in this series already, and we get it, right? It's a game seven, and I'll use hockey as an example, but we see this all the time. Guys, yesterday, that total for Boston and Toronto, it was like five some spots, 5.5 under minus 145. Like, these game sevens get tight. They get slow. One of my favorite examples, too, is if you guys remember the bubble, we'll go back to Denver really quickly, but Denver and Utah played each other, right? It was an awesome duel between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray. Those games were averaging like 240 points. And then you get to game seven, it was like 87-85. Like, these things really slow down when you're talking about elimination. And you're already talking about two teams who are offensively challenged, who are not playing high level offense. This thing's going to slow down. I think if you're talking about betting it today, Michael, you're going under 197.5. And I also think the market got it right in buying off of that 4.5 that was out there pretty briefly on the overnight when that first opened up and got this down to about 3. I don't think there's much value in a side, but I still think about 195.5 or better is playable to an under.
JVT, I thought the Knicks had already won the Eastern Conference when they beat Philadelphia in the first round, but they have to play more basketball, apparently. They're going to start game one against Indiana tomorrow, laying 6 in that series. Is there danger for the Knicks after that series with Philadelphia? All the emotion of there, Philly, New York, and now kind of sleepy Indiana comes to town?
I think if there was any other team, Dave, I would say maybe. But this team's locked and loaded. Like, they are focused on every single moment. Tom Thibodeau's not going to let them rest on their laurels, if you will, as you move forward. And the reason why that series, and I think, as Michael, who watched that series pretty closely, you know, the reason why that series, I thought, had the level of physicality and intensity that it did is not only because of the way the Knicks play, but I think we all kind of understood the winner of this is very, very likely to make it to an Eastern Conference Finals, given the opponent that they're probably going to face in Indiana. This is a series in which the Knicks should come out and display a level of physicality that Indiana is not used to. Dave, Indiana is one of the poor defensive rebounding teams in the NBA. The Knicks are one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the NBA. They've got poor perimeter defense. They've got Jalen Brunson and other pieces to take advantage of that. I laid 1.5 games at about minus 125 here with the New York Knicks. I think that's a playable number. I think that this should be a series that ends relatively quickly if the Knicks are on their P's and Q's, and I think they will, because Thibodeau's not going to let them sleepwalk past this opponent.
Well, we saw the Clippers go bye-bye, and that Mavericks kind of did them with a really good second half, gave up a big lead in the first half, but now here come the Thunder. How do you handicap this one, JVT?
So I think this is fascinating, Michael, because it's an interesting basketball matchup, but I'll say just right away, I think from a pure number standpoint, when you're looking at a series price, that Oklahoma City is being undervalued. They deserve to be favored by a bit more. We have seen now to this point, home court in the postseason has meant quite a bit, I should say. If you're talking about average net rating of home teams in non-garbage time, we're talking about just over 5 points. Playing at home, and the Thunder have that in the series, is going to be extremely important. But they also have little things that they could do pretty well. You know, the Mavericks have that lineup that they have been rolling out there, and while it's been very effective in cutting off the paint, you're playing with essentially 3 non-shooters out there. Derrick Jones Jr. shot 38% in the series against the Clippers. He's a 34% shooter for this whole entire like sample size. So I think with Oklahoma City, who showed some zone defense in the final game that they played against each other, where everybody started, that they've got the ability to drive and attack this paint defense, to spread this team out if they want to play 5 out and really shoot the ball. I think Oklahoma City's being a little undervalued here. So from a series price standpoint, I laid it with OKC. I think minus 115 is a very cheap price for a team that analytically is very, very, very sound.
All right, JVT, got to wrap it up. But very quickly, Anthony Edwards, does he remind you of anybody?
Yeah, I think he reminds me of Anthony Edwards. He's better. Don't disrespect him. All right, he's Anthony Edwards. Let's go.
He's the one of one. Anthony Edwards. He is one of one. JVT, appreciate you, man. Catch him weeknights here on the network with Thanks, Tim guys. Murray on VSiN Primetime. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little AFC West. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA all the way through the finals. DraftKings Sportsbook's got you covered. Same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use the code VSiN. New customers can bet just $5. Get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That code is VSIN. Only on DraftKings, and the crown can be all yours. Looking for a new crown this year in the NFL? The Kansas City Chiefs are the reigning defendings two-time Super Bowl champions. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, you've been doing a deep dive on some of these divisions and what you've seen. Let's do the AFC West today, and we'll start off with the team that might be the biggest challenge to Kansas City this year, even though it's year one for Coach Harbs there in LA. When you look at what the Chargers did in the draft, I look at it, you know, A to Z and go, boy, it does feel like a Jim Harbaugh type draft. You go with a big tackle out of Notre Dame, fifth overall in Joe Alt, come back with a guy in Ladd McConkey in the second round of receiver. You get some linebackers, some help in the D-tackle spot, and then get some corners. We talked about roster construction earlier in the program, Michael. Is this what we're doing here? We're kind of flipping over the old receivers, out with the old, in with the new with some of these picks.
Well, I mean, that, you know, Keenan Allen's a really good player, but Keenan Allen was, you know, is a possession type receiver for them, and they wanted to keep him. They just wouldn't take the pay cut, so they needed to move on from that because they needed some flexibility with the cap. But yeah, I think if you like, I think this is all about Justin Herbert, right? And so the reality of it is can Jim make Justin Herbert better? And if you go back to when he went to San Francisco, when Alex Smith was viewed as a bust, and they made Alex Smith a much better player. And of course, they drafted Kaepernick and they traded Smith. But to me, the best days that Smith had were when he played for Jim there. And I think that's going to be the same thing here with Herbert, because they're not going to ask Herbert to do everything. They're going to run the football. They're going to be much physical in the offensive line, and they're going to try to control and manage the game and play the game to win, not play the game based on what analytics tells them to do. Go for it on fourth down in your own territory. It's going to be a little bit of a different, it's going to be a tougher Charger team. And I think what one of the things we have to be really understanding is that talent really matters, but coaching matters a great deal. And I think they'll be much improved in the coaching area.
8.5 is that win total for the Chargers this year. I love the way you phrased that. You know, like, Jim doesn't care what the people on X are going to say about whether he should have gone. Like, this is an adult in the room that's going to make those determinations based on what's going on in the game, right? I mean, like, to me, the schedule, the division, does it lend itself to a possible over here for year one for Harbs?
Well, I mean, when you break down their team last year, they lost so many close games, right? And they couldn't stop the run because they were just soft as could be on defense. And they struggled to stop the pass. They were 28th in the league in allowing yards per attempt. And this is coming from a coach whose specialty was defense, right? Mm-hmm. And that was his defense. Jim will get the players' attention. And getting the players' attention will mean he'll raise the level of their play. We'll maybe see Darwin James play at a higher level than what the perception has been of him, because the perception of him as a talent and the perception of him as a producer are a little bit different. I think all the players are going to have to raise their level. And so no one accounts for that, right? Everybody always says, you know, the players are there. Well, they didn't play to the level. I mean, you can't be as bad as they were on defense and play to that level. So I think there's certainly that's the case. And they'll win closer games and they'll be a tougher team, which will help them win close games.
Let's go to the Broncos. And I guess a bit of a surprise, like Sean Payton, we kind of knew that they liked Bo Nix. I didn't know they'd stay right there at 12 and draft Bo Nix as the last of those six quarterbacks taken in the top 12. And then he goes past that, and he's going to get some help, certainly at edge in the third round, get some receivers later in the draft as well. What's your make of what Denver has done with the draft and also what they've done in free agency?
Well, I think the first year he comes in, he tries to fix the offensive line. Spent a lot of money from Mike McGlinchey. You know, he signed, you know, drafted. He signed Ben Powers from Baltimore. And so they're going to have to play Manier as the right guard. He's a really good player. So they're going to have to pay him in free agency. They would ideally like to get a better player than Garrett Bowles at left tackle, but they can't quite get that done. So we know they went into the last year trying to fix the line. and worrying about, hey, can we run the football, which they did a good job of, right? And Javonte Williams is a good back. So Sean's going to run the football. And then defensively, you know, after that Miami debacle down there of 70 points, they started to play a style of defense that Vance Joseph was proud of, and they're getting better up front. They were able to rush the passer a little bit better. They're stouter. They signed Zach Allen, who Vance had with them at Arizona. They just get Jonathan Franklin Myers from the Jets. So I think, to me, this is a team that kind of has a 9-8, 8-9 feel to it, but improving, right? They're improving. And I think the second year, will it come down to Bo Nix? Look, Bo Nix is going to do what Sean tells him to do within the framework of the offense. Something that was the biggest problem with Russell, because Russell couldn't stay on script. It wasn't a system that Russell was used to or conducive to.
It's interesting because that win total is at 5.5. And I think from what I'm picking up from you, you're trusting Sean Payton to be able to turn this thing around a little bit quicker, right, than maybe people anticipate?
Yeah. Well, I mean, 5 wins. I mean, look, I know the Raiders have beaten them twice the last 2 years. But, you know, I think to me, the difference between, look, the quarterbacking of the Raiders remains to be seen. And yes, the Raiders improve up front with Wilkins to go along with their other defensive front players, Max Crosby being number one, but we're not sure how good the Raiders offensive line is going to be. I think, to me, you know, if they can get 2 wins from the Raiders, or, you know, that all of a sudden you're only looking at 6 wins.
Right.
I kind of have a hard time believing that Sean's not going to get more than 6 wins, just managing the game correctly and what he did last year. I mean, think about it, overcoming that 70-point debacle. Mm. Right. I mean, you know, they give up 70 the 1 week and they come back and beat the Bears team. You know, they lose to the Jets. Wilson turned. That was a 24-21 game, and they're driving to kind of tie it or win it. And Wilson fumbles, trying to scramble, do Russell Wilson type things. They beat Green Bay. Remember, they beat Green Bay 1917 when Green Bay was struggling a little bit. Then they beat the Chiefs at home.
Yep.
You know, and so they went into Buffalo and won. So, like, let's not underestimate the power of the coach. And when you're in the AFC West, you've got 3 really, really good coaches: Andy Reid, Jim Harbaugh, and Sean Payton. Antonio Pierce got a long way to go to catch up to them.
Let's talk about the Raiders draft. You get a tight end at 13 and Brock Bowers overall. You mentioned the offensive line. They tried to shore that up a little bit in the second round and the third round with those picks there, as you see. Defense in round 4 and 5 as well, back to the running back position before you get a couple more in the defensive backfield. What do you make of the Raiders overall draft?
Well, look, you know, the draft is interesting. I'm not sure that everybody was on the same page in the Raider draft room on this pick, right? And I'm told that the Raiders were talking about taking the tackle, they were going to take a defensive end, a Latua, or they were going to take the tight end, and they picked the tight end. So I would have taken Latua. I would have taken, you know, Murphy from Texas, but they went with the tight end, who's a really good player. But it's hard to count how many plays. You got Michael Mayer on the team, who you drafted last year. You don't block anybody up front. It's going to be an interesting team, because Gardner Minshew is another guy that you're counting on to start 17 games and produce, you know, and they brought Aiden O'Connell. I know he was a rookie last year, and it's going to be a challenge that he should be improved. We'll see. But last year, it wasn't really right there for him. I think we're overvaluing the Raiders based on what happened at the end of the year because of the momentum they gained from the change to now that momentum's gone. And how are they going to move the football effectively? They don't have Josh Jacobs anymore, right? They got Zamir White's their lead back with Madison, who they signed from Minnesota. I'm not sure that they've improved tremendously enough, especially considering that they have way too many centers on the team. We know this, right? We know Andre James plays center. Parham's a better center. And they drafted Powers Johnson, who's really a better center. And who's going to play guard and how it's going to work out?
Got about a minute to go. The Chiefs, they move up in the draft late first round and take Xavier Worthy out of Texas at wide receiver. Normally when Andy Reid moves up, it normally works out. What do you make of the Chiefs overall draft?
Well, I think the Chiefs' biggest issue is who's going to replace Snead. It isn't about the receivers because, look, let's face it, they have 2 huge holes on their team. You know, who's going to replace Snead and who's going to be their starting left tackle? Now, they drafted the kid Kingsley, and I can't say his last name, from BYU in the second round. They traded up to get him. He's got to be their left tackle. I don't think it's going to be Juana Morris. I think it's got to be this young man that they drafted. That's a huge hole for the team. And the reason they went to a run-based offense is because of their offensive line, because they couldn't really protect well enough, as we saw, and they turned the ball over way too much. It's going to be interesting to see how this works out. And the corner situation, if you're going to play as much man as they're going to play, somebody's got to lock down. And whether it's going to be Joshua Williams or whether it's going to be Jalen Watson, somebody's got to replace Snead.
Never happened in the Super Bowl era, trying to go for not one, not two, but three Super Bowl titles in a row for the Chiefs. All right, Michael, when we come back to begin hour number two, let's get back to some NFL conversations here and some interesting comments coming out of Pittsburgh. We'll discuss that next when you come back with us right here on the Lombardi Line.